Last weekend, it was announced that the AIDS epidemic in Australia was over. And yet thousands of people still live with HIV. But was it really ever an epidemic? And how many people live with HIV today? And what is their quality of life like? What are the figures for people suffering HIV in this country? To talk about that, our guest is Professor Martin French, Professor and Consultant in Clinical Immunology at the University of Western Australia and Royal Perth Hospital. Professor French, a very good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good evening, Rod.
You've been working in this area for, what, 30 years or so?
30 years.
30 yeah. years. Can you remember the first time that you heard about AIDS or HIV as we know it now?
I can. I was working in England at that time before I came to Australia. It was in 1981 when the first cases of AIDS were described in the USA. I had an interest in immunodeficiency diseases, and when I read about these cases in the medical journals back in 1981, I became very interested in the topic.
These days, we think of AIDS as the most prominent of those immunodeficiency diseases, but are there many others?
Oh, there are many others. AIDS is one of what we call secondary immunodeficiency diseases. These are diseases that are caused by a disease process or by an infection, and there are other causes of immune deficiency, such as drugs used to treat cancer and leukemia and consequences of bone marrow transplantation, etc. There are also what we call primary immunodeficiency diseases. These are conditions that are caused by genetic abnormalities that an individual inherits from their parents. These are less common, but they're certainly just as significant.
So when you heard about this, did you have any idea that this would become such a prominent part of the medical world?
I didn't. No, not at all. There were just a few cases of this unusual immunodeficiency disease described in America. As I say, they caught my attention because I have an interest in this area and always have done. But I didn't at the time realise it was going to be such a significant problem worldwide.
This week we heard that the AIDS epidemic, in Australia at least, is over.
Yes.
Was it an epidemic to begin with? I mean, how many people constitute an epidemic, and did we ever have that many people with AIDS in Australia?
There, of course, haven't been as many people in Australia as there has been in other parts of the world, particularly sub-Saharan Africa. So AIDS wasn't an epidemic in that it affected huge numbers of the population, and it didn't have the same effect as, say, Ebola did in Western Africa recently. But it was an epidemic in that it was affecting significant proportions of particular sections of our society, particularly gay men, and it had the potential to spread throughout the community. Although measures undertaken by the medical community and the government prevented that from happening. So I think it was an epidemic in one regard, but not in another, in terms of large proportions of the population being affected.
Right. Why didn't it spread to a more mainstream part of the population? That it began in the gay community, pretty much these days, with about 90% of new infections, remains in the gay community. Why did it not spread to more mainstream community?
Well, firstly, I think it's important to say that although generally in Australia it's in 90% of cases are in the gay community, that's not true in all parts of Australia. So, for example, in Western Australia, it's about 50-50, and it has been for several years. The main reasons why it didn't spread more widely into the general community are, firstly, with intravenous drug users. The medical community and governments here were very proactive in introducing harm reduction strategies, injecting rooms, clean syringes, etc., to prevent intravenous drug users from becoming infected. Secondly, the government, also with the medical community and the affected community, were very active in prevention strategies, education, and in ensuring that antiretroviral drugs were introduced into Australia as quickly and as effectively as possible. And through all of those measures, we basically kept the numbers of patients in Australia to relatively low numbers compared with some parts of the world.
So just go back to what you were saying about Western Australia. Why is it that in Western Australia it's 50-50 gay community, heterosexual community? Why is that the case?
A lot of it seems to relate to migrants into Western Australia and also local people contracting the infection overseas in Southeast Asia and to a lesser extent Africa. There are a number of factors involved, but all of those are responsible for it.
Okay, so the figures I was looking at says that maybe about 9% of the HIV infections in Australia are in the heterosexual community, and about half of that because of people coming from countries, Papua New Guinea, well, places in Africa perhaps, where it's far more prevalent in the heterosexual community.
Yes, I think that's fair to say. A lot of people who have acquired the infection heterosexually have acquired it overseas, and you know, Southeast Asia should be mentioned as well as Papua New Guinea, and for some reason we seem to have those people overrepresented in Western Australia.
Very interesting. At the time, there were a lot of people engaged in the search for a cure.
Yeah.
That hasn't really happened. It's a managed situation as at the moment. Tell me about why it is or how it was that we were able to manage AIDS and not have people go from what is known as, you know, to full-blown AIDS from HIV.
Well, I think it's quite interesting, Rod, to consider something about the biology of the HIV virus. HIV is one of 20 or 30 different viruses that can infect humans that we never ever get rid of. They stay with us for the whole of our lives. The best examples that people would know of would be the chickenpox virus and the herpes virus that can cause cold sores. Now, what happens with these viruses is that the immune system controls them throughout our lives. Occasionally, the immune system doesn't do its job as well, and they reactivate, and so we might get a cold sore on our face, or we might get shingles, so say when we get older. But generally, these viruses are controlled by the immune system. HIV is so different to all these other viruses because the cells that it infects are cells of the immune system. So it infects the cells that should be actually controlling the infection, and that's why we can't control it, and why it gradually destroys the immune system, and that results in AIDS, and that makes people more susceptible to other infections. What's happened over the last 20 years or so is that drugs have been developed that control HIV and do the job that the immune system should be doing. So these drugs are stopping the virus from replicating, whereas the immune system should be doing that but can't because HIV destroys it.
Prevention in some areas of the community that you would think might be at a higher risk has been cut to almost zero.
Yes.
Those who are haemophiliac, there are virtually no contractions of HIV in that community. I noticed in the sex worker community, they reckon there's fewer than 0.1% of sex workers in Australia with HIV. Why do you think in some areas it's been extraordinarily successful in prevention or having those people not contract HIV?
Because prevention programs, education and prevention programs have been extremely effective in Australia and in other countries, it must be said. So, for example, the blood supply is very, very safe in Australia because the blood transfusion service introduced strategies to ensure that blood was not taken from HIV-infected people. And those strategies are very successful. Amongst prostitutes, female prostitutes, the health of prostitutes is monitored very carefully these days, very carefully, and the industry has taken a very responsible approach to ensuring that people don't have HIV infection and that it's not transmitted. And the major success story in Australia, of course, is in intravenous drug users. Internationally, we are applauded for the quick way in which we responded to the issue of HIV infection in drug users and introduced harm reduction strategies.
So quite often we hear some people saying that we shouldn't have needle exchange programs, that we shouldn't have supervised injecting rooms, but they can directly be linked to the fact that HIV infections in intravenous drug users is down to about 1 or 2%.
Very much so. There were a number of people in Australia who played a very important role in ensuring that we developed this philosophy in Australia of harm reduction. And by reducing harm amongst intravenous drug users, by preventing them from getting infection, we of course reduced harm within the community and we stopped the spread of the virus throughout the community through that particular channel.
So at the moment, it's maybe about 1,200 new infections every year, and there's been a slight uptick since the late 1990s.
Yeah.
Can we ever reasonably expect to get that down to a minimal level?
Well, I think so, because obviously the most effective way of doing that would be to develop a vaccine that we could use to prevent people from developing HIV infection, such as we've done with hepatitis B virus infection. But that's a long way off at the moment. But what could be done is to allow people to take medications that prevent them from becoming infected. So taking oral medications that prevent infection. This has been given the name of pre-exposure prophylaxis, or PrEP. Mm. And that means you take antiviral drugs, similar drugs that are used to treat people, but you take it to prevent people from becoming infected. And a number of international studies have shown that this strategy is very effective. And I think as PrEP is introduced into Australia over the next few years, we will see rates of new infection go down even further.
That's quite possible with HIV, but do you think that might actually lead to some people engaging in risky sexual behaviour because they think, well, I've taken this, I'm safe from that, and in fact it might actually lead to a spread of other diseases, herpes and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, that is very fair comment, and I think that's something we've got to be guarded about as PrEP is introduced, that people do also consider other infections as well, and I think that is a very important issue, yeah.
Okay, so how preventable is it these days, given that, you know, we are looking at roughly the same level as about 1992? That's remarkable. So that's in the first few years of the crisis in Australia. That if we are around about that level, what should we be doing? Are we reaching everybody who needs to know about this?
Well, the other aspect of prevention that I've not mentioned, of course, is treating people who have HIV infection, because it's from them that others will become infected. And there is now excellent evidence from a number of studies to show that if someone has HIV infection, they take antiretroviral drugs and the infection is completely suppressed, then the risk of them transmitting the infection to someone else is virtually zero. And so if we identify everyone who is infected and we treat them effectively, if we offer prophylaxis to individuals who have a high risk of acquiring infection, then these two strategies alone should reduce new infections substantially over the next few years.
But that again is a dangerous situation, surely. If you know that your partner has HIV, why would you want to have unsafe sex with them?
Well, because, Rod, firstly, we know that using condoms substantially reduces transmission, but there's also data from a number of different sources, not just one, to show that if you have undetectable virus in your blood from taking antiretroviral drugs, the risks of transmission are essentially zero.
Okay, so that's what's happening, say, with Charlie Sheen, that's the situation that he's in.
Well, one can assume that. I don't know for sure, but one can assume that's what the situation is.
So do we know from the HIV cases in Australia that those new infections, people are being infected by others who didn't necessarily know that they had contracted HIV?
Yeah, I can't quote you any reliable statistics on that, but just anecdotally, I know that that does happen, that people are infected by partners who themselves don't know that they're infected. So that certainly does happen, but I can't tell you how common that is. It's difficult to get that sort of data.
For people who may be concerned, how soon can you find out whether you do have HIV and what happens to somebody who has contracted it?
Well, if you have contracted the infection 6 months ago, a year ago, or longer ago, and have not had any sexual activity since then a test will tell you whether you have or you haven't got the infection. So if you have antibodies, then you have the infection. If you don't have antibodies against the virus, you won't. Where it becomes more difficult is if someone has had sexual activity, say, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, and they go for a test. Sometimes the tests in the blood, the antibodies we detect or the viral particles we detect may not show for 2 or 3 weeks. And so sometimes you can get a false negative result if you've had sexual activity in the last week or two. And it can take up to 6 weeks to know that you have or you haven't got the infection. Mm-hmm. But that's specifically in that situation where you've had very recent sexual activity.
Okay. Finally then, maybe about 35,000 people in Australia have contracted HIV in the last 30-odd years.
Yeah.
About 10,000... so a little bit less than a third, have died from AIDS in that time. That is a tragic figure, but there would have been many, many diseases that more than 9,000 or 10,000 people have died in the last 30 years. That tells us, I suppose, about a highly motivated community and a lot of money being spent to research and provide those drugs. That money has been well spent, but do you think we need to be spending it on other diseases as well?
Oh, of course, there are many other diseases that affect our community and are worthy of research dollars. The diabetes epidemic that's affecting the country at the moment springs to mind. But I think that we shouldn't forget that although the end of AIDS in Australia has been declared, it's not the end of HIV. The virus is still affecting people and infecting people. Numbers of cases will continue to grow, as you say, not to a large degree, but they will continue to grow. And there will, over the years, be a large number of people taking drug therapy to suppress the infection, which they will have to take lifelong. So the focus now in HIV research is trying to find ways in which we can cure the infection so that people don't have to take lifelong drug therapy to suppress it. And I, in fact, this evening I'm flying to a conference in South Africa where strategies for curing HIV infection are going to be discussed.
Yes, at some point someone with HIV will die of old age.
Well, they are, Rod. They are. I tell you, it's very interesting that being involved in it for 30 years, I can remember the bad old days of people with AIDS, mainly young people coming into hospital and dying. And some of those people who survived have grown older with me. And now I see people in my clinic who are in their 70s and 80s. And it's very interesting to see that and the change that's happened over the years.
I really appreciate your time this morning. And thank you very much, Professor Martin French.
Okay, thank you, Rob.
That is Professor Martin French, Professor and Consultant in Clinical Immunology at the University of Western Australia and Royal Perth Hospital.